Rodgers in trouble. It's going to get there. He turned 32 yesterday. Does he have a vintage moment in it? In the end zone, it is caught for the win. Richard Rodgers with a walk-off touchdown. A game ender for the Packers.
Welcome to the Glass Half Empty podcast. I'm Ryan Glasspiegel.
Okay, I only hear your voice.
NFL insider Josina Anderson. Josina has been all over TV for several years now, for a while for ESPN. So I think the biggest story as it pertains to the football on the field right now is what's going to happen with Ezekiel Elliott. Based on your combination of reporting and opinion, do you believe that Elliott is going to be suspended? And if so, for how many games?
Well, I don't think anyone can say exactly for sure what is going to happen. I think that you can critically look at a number of things that have taken place surrounding his name and see that the NFL has taken its time, almost 14 months, to conduct an investigation around a series of incidents and to try and come up with what they feel is the best determination for discipline or not. All I can say is that there is potential for it, possibly, under the personal conduct policy, which you do not have to be arrested or charged for to have discipline underneath that. And, or if there's evidence that they have gathered in their own independent investigation that would warrant or merit discipline that we're not aware of. As we know, with the Dallas nightclub incident, the investigation was suspended. So therefore, you know, there is no, official charge there. It is where it is right now. And, you know, as far as the other incidents, we'll have to wait and see, what they turn up or what they don't have and kind of go from there. But I do not have a definitive number to give you with regards to that, because we're not privy to everything that they know or don't know.
Earlier this week, Chris Carter had a report. Now, the first part of it didn't turn out to be correct, possibly because they might have had a decision made, but might have delayed it just because they didn't want it to look like they leaked to him. But he also said that there were elements of destruction of evidence and maybe graphic photos that didn't come up in the police investigation that you mentioned. In your reporting, have you heard anything along those lines, or did that come as big of a surprise to you as it came to me when I saw that on television the other day?
I mean, I'm not aware of any photographs that, you know, police or any official surrounding any investigation may or may not have had. So I don't specifically know that. I do know that there are plenty of people who are concerned. I think that is the more definitive term that, you know, I can use based off of people who I have talked to surrounding, the Cowboys running back, just because a lot of things have happened. We can all talk about to what degree and, you know, to what degree something merits discipline, but people are definitely concerned. Some people feel as though he's been lucky so far with, you know, certain things in terms of, escaping further, and maybe just anything that has happened in terms of punishment wise so far. And I don't want to get too specific into that because, again, I think we just need to kind of hear the final word of what the NFL has and then kind of go from there and make a better, more informed evaluation of the total investigation.
switching to another team in Texas, Deshaun Watson, the buzz on him this year has felt a little bit like the Dak Prescott buzz last year, where they're into camp and all of a sudden you start to hear a bunch of whispers, oh, they're really poised and they have command of the huddle. Then he came out in the Texans preseason opener and looked pretty good. Can you see like a Dak Prescott comparison for Watson's rookie year, or is that maybe too lofty of a hope?
I think, you know, the way any season goes for any player is a combination of factors. It's individual skill. It's, you know, the makeup of the team. It's the schedule. It's how the game unfolds that makes up the overall progress of the season. So a lot of factors have to fall into place for the team and or individual to experience success. I think that Deshaun Watson certainly has the making of being a really good quarterback. I think his record collegiately speaks for itself. I think his ability to have his pulse drop in situations of big pressure when everyone is looking has been evident on the biggest stage of college. And I think if everything altogether continues to work in his favor, that those traits will just show more and more. I definitely feel like I saw some good signs last night. I wasn't expecting perfection. I mean, he's a rookie. You got to take time to get your feet underneath you. But I think the Texans should feel very good about the move that they made to acquire him.
You've been pretty vocal on Colin Kaepernick, as pretty much everybody who covers the league has. But you had some interesting opinions earlier this week. You said that you were surprised that other players have advocated for him, but nobody within the quarterback ranks has. Can you summarize your viewpoint on that for people who might not have seen that clip yet?
Yeah, I was just saying that I was just wondering where is, I guess, more support for him within, you know, the NFL player ranks, in terms of whether it be his fellow quarterbacks or even more players who are not quarterbacks outside of the players we normally see who tend to be vocal in these types of situations. You know, support and solidarity are very important to make bigger points that need to be made when it comes to fairness and when it comes to everything, you know, being equal in terms of meritocracy. And I say that from the standpoint of, you know, looking at the names of quarterbacks who are on rosters or who have gotten opportunities or who have been called for opportunities ahead of, you know, Colin Kaepernick. And it's not to say that those particular quarterbacks aren't good or don't have potential in their own right. It's just more so highlighting also the potential that we know that Colin has and also what he's accomplished, albeit, you know, two or three or however many years ago, 2012, 2013, when he was experiencing more success. So that's really what I was trying to point out. And sometimes it is about, you know, highlighting things that don't seem right. And I feel that that is part of, you know, the job journalistically, whether you are a news reporter or a sports reporter, you know, you're supposed to shine a light on how things are going and what seems right about it or what does not seem right about it. And I think that we've been trying to do that with the various discussions that we've had on the topic.
So if you were ranking, like, I don't know, the top 50 quarterbacks in the world, it's hard to do when you don't have all of them right in front of you. But I would put Kaepernick in the, like, 25 to 30 range right now. I'd say there's probably 20 to 25 quarterbacks in the NFL that I think are discernibly better than him now. Now, not better than him 2 or 3 years ago, but better than what he's been the last 2 years. Where would you put him?
I don't have a number for you. I would just say that he definitively deserves to be on a roster just by comparing him to quarterbacks that are on rosters, even from a depth perspective, or, you know, you can look at some of the starting quarterbacks right now, or quarterbacks that are competing for the starting jobs, that he legitimately would press in a competition if he were allowed to compete. So it's one thing to, you know, make an assessment on Colin Kaepernick without even bringing him in for a workout. It's another thing to be informed after actually looking under the hood, and that just hasn't even happened yet. I mean, you know, he hasn't even competed, so it's very hard to, you know, speak to me at least about, you know, where he is or what he is when you haven't looked. You can't tell me definitively what he is or what he isn't. If you're denied an opportunity, how do you know? So I don't want to, you know, get into if he's 20 or 25 or 30 or 35. I don't know that, you know, but I can tell you he deserves to be on a roster.
From these like individual coach and front office discussions, do you think that it's possible that the reason that, now, he's better than a lot of the league's backups. I think you and I both agree on that. And then, as you said, where he is versus the other starters in the league is a little bit more of a gray area. But there's just a general sense, it's not punishing Kaepernick for his direct protest per se, as much as they don't want to have a backup quarterback who they are constantly being like asked questions about and things of that nature. Do you think that it's the protest or the fact that they just don't want any backup quarterback who has a big media profile?
I just think it's a combination of things. Every, you know, club is different. Every club has the right to evaluate, you know, the roster and their personnel the way that they want to, you know, so I definitely recognize that and don't want to, you know, ignore that. I think it's a variety of things. And I do think that under the right circumstances, there, you know, will be a club that will give him the opportunity. Those things just haven't lined up yet. At least I would hope. I'm not that jaded yet to say that Colin Kaepernick is not going to get an opportunity in 2017. But, you know, you would have to analyze each, you know, owner and each roster and, you know, the depth and kind of go from there to make an assessment and, you know, the makeup of the community and all those other things that play into an owner's decision, which to some degree you have to respect because the buck stops with the owner and go, you know, from there in terms of their desire to weigh it. You know, but ultimately, if it comes down to football and evaluating the position, you know, quarterback beside quarterback beside quarterback, you know, you would think that he would have a place on someone's team.
Switching topic from the NFL to your own career. So before you were at ESPN, you'd spent several years at a Fox affiliate in Denver as a sports anchor, reporter, producer. You did a lot of coverage of the Broncos. During this time, how do you get on ESPN's radar, and how did you wind up attaining a job there in 2011?
The more specific answer is that I had been in Denver for a long time, and at one point I reached out to Adam Schefter to give me advice on my agent situation, and as a result of that call, he asked me about my own aspirations and where I would like to work, to which I answered, you know, I would love to work at ESPN and do a variety of things, including, you know, reporting, anchoring, hosting, or what have you. And within a few days, he was able to help me organize getting in there on an audition. And a few weeks later, I was hired. And that's literally how that happened. But it wasn't before years and years and years and years of work, working in multiple stations, you know, as a reporter, editor, producer, you know, doing a lot of things and multiple tasks, you know, on my own and trying to kind of garner the, you know, things that it takes to be kind of what I am now, which is an insider. And I was very fortunate to work in the Colorado market, which had a lot of things going on from,
you know, Mike Shanahan, Josh McDaniels, Brandon Marshall, Jay Cutler, Tony Scheffler, when those guys are trying to leave, you know, the different coaches that came in, Carmelo, Allen Iverson, Rockies, Avalanche, there's so much going on, Travis Henry stuff, Darrent Williams. It was just a, you know, a hotbed of constant news that helped to refine, you know, the breaking news skill set and just how to develop sources and breaking out from there to really trying to develop contacts outside of Denver. My mindset was never about being bound or limited geographically. Like I never looked at, I got to just talk about Denver because I'm in Denver. And that I don't think was really a mindset that was in Colorado at that time. But having been fortunate enough to, you know, come out of the DC, Virginia, you know, Maryland area in terms of my news career before that, I had an opportunity to observe the Michael Wilbons and the David Aldridges, the Steve Leishes, the John Mitchells, all the people that were in that market that kind of showed me how they go about being an insider and how they go about getting unique content and not just waiting for everyone to get the same sound. And I feel like I applied and brought that mindset to Denver. And it helped me to look at Denver as not just being Denver. And so it spent more time in the visitors' locker rooms and going to events outside of Colorado, All-Stars, Super Bowls, you know, different games that were the away games and trying to build my sphere outside of just my local confines. And I thought that was really important to having a network of contacts and resources outside of where I was even before I got to ESPN. And hopefully I feel that's why I was blessed enough to break a lot of stories I didn't even have to do at Colorado before I got to ESPN.
That's very interesting. And you mentioned your ascent within ESPN from being like a reporter to being an insider. And the distinction there is now all of a sudden you're really weighing in on like national things at any time. And since you became an insider, you've also, they've been soliciting your opinion on some of these studio shows in addition to you providing news. When you talk about like cultivating sources and making contacts and everything of that nature, how do you measure some of the things that you have, some of the people and teams and organizations that you have relationships with versus when you have to opine on those same topics of people you might be close with, hoping that you are tough but fair, but like really don't violate a personal relationship or something that was told to you in confidence? How do you go about mitigating those things together before you go on air?
Well, first of all, anything that is told in confidence off the record remains that way. So that's number one. And number two, if there comes a time when you have to speak critically about someone that you have a rapport with, the operative word is respect. You have to do that with respect. You have to do that with balance. And, you know, try to not, you know, come across in a way that is unfair, at the same time, not in a way that is, you know, completely ignoring of something that may or may not be egregious. You can't do that either. And the important thing is to garner the respect in the relationship so that there's an understanding when those situations come up with, you know, the person that you have a rapport with. And then with you was being a reporter that they trust and go to. And you just do your best in trying to follow your inner instinct and, you know, your experience. And, of course, over the many, many years that I've been doing this, you know, you're not always perfect. But you try to have a high batting average when it comes to how you handle every challenge that is in front of you. And in those times that you fall short because you're human, you try to just learn from them and be that much more sharper and wiser when a similar situation comes up. But I think the best way to handle that is just a lot of, you know, pre-advanced talking and understanding, you know, within a conversation, you know, hey, my expectation is that, you know, this entire conversation is off the record unless I ask for this portion or all of it to be on the record. And if there's something that I'm discussing, hopefully, you know, the people that I talk to have a good understanding of what I would be saying, you know, on the air. And if there's a chance where I can't get to somebody, that, you know, I'm working within a framework in my mind that I feel comfortable going as well. So there's a lot of things that you have to be mindful of. But over the years of being a reporter, an insider, you know, and a person on TV, you know, this is what, you know, you can't circumvent when it comes to experience. You develop different levels of filters that help you, you know, to navigate and to the even the finer point of just word choice. You know, when you are describing what is going on with a certain situation. And I can think of a one on the top of my head that just got, you know, situation and, you know, a little murkiness with a, you know, and how something was reported, not with me, but into something else. And I was just saying that, you know, in that instance, it's just word choice. Word choice can throw something exactly off. So, you know, you try to, all of us, we try to do our best. And I'm no different in that sense.
I mean this as an utmost compliment. Your wardrobe is like very distinctive and different than anybody else who's on television, especially anybody else who's on ESPN. I was wondering what's like the process behind how you plan what you wear on air, and do you have any like different fashion inspirations that are particularly interesting?
Interesting question. I'm always, you know, mindful about, you know, finding tops, for example, that have, you know, that are interesting from the waist up, because a lot of times that is what the viewer just sees. So if you know that you're going to be doing a live shot and you're going to be standing up in front of a team facility, you know, I'm trying to be mindful of having something that is interesting from that vantage point. And when I know that I'm going to be in studio, also I try to think of, you know, the whole picture from head to toe and how I'm dressed. And a lot of times I'm very cognizant of trying to have a silhouette that is very, you know, feminine, very classic. At times, you know, I do come to the edge of, you know, fashion as well, but trying to, you know, have a signature look while at the same time, you know, being mindful of the overall look. So there are times when I like to be more classic than others. There's times when I like to be a little bit, you know, more different. But I do think all the things that I end up choosing, people would probably say that's Josina. And I think that even just for female talent that's out there, and you're not always going to be 100% with kind of your formula for putting something together, but for the most part, you know, my silhouettes are, you know, at the knee, and, you know, feminine blouse or you know certain refined higher heel, but professional and things like that, and then times when I push the box a little bit, you know, it's still like to think that I'm mindful of just, you know, just the overall, you know, silhouette, so that if there's a, you know, something that you're doing that is a little bit more, you know, pushing of the edge, then I still have pants that come to my ankles, or I still, you know, my arms are covered or something like that. So, you know, I just try to be me and true to myself, and not every time you're going to get everything, you know, perfect. I don't have a stylist. I dress myself. I find things myself. I do my, a lot of my own makeup at times. And I also get help with that at times and with my hair as well. And, you know, sometimes there are some days when things come across better than others, just like any other thing.
I know you've got a hard out in 2 minutes. Is there anything that I didn't ask about that you think is really interesting and or important that you want to discuss on this platform?
You know, just I guess maybe circling back to the Kaepernick thing. You know, I know that the rally is scheduled in New York in front of the New York offices August 23rd. I think it will be very interesting to see what that turnout will be like. and what the power of a quote-unquote street movement will be, and then kind of how it takes off from there, if there's any impact or not. But, you know, I definitely think it's important to allow people to express themselves and for people not to, you know, as long as that it's within a certain respect and there's a willingness to have a conversation, that idea of expressing yourself doesn't cost you your job, as long as those things are being minded.
Thank you so much, Josina. We really appreciate your time. Best of luck this NFL season. Again, thank you again for coming on.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, bye, Josina.
Turn straight.